information of this coach is Hazard, Kentucky. We're due there at 5:15. For your convenience, there's a restroom located in the rear of the coach.
You gonna get sick? Huh? Oh my God, he's coming at you!
Alright, when it comes to 2-year-old Olivia James, you are not the father.
You've irritated the tool gods. You must now be smeared with the holy grease of disdain.
Brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com. It's JG's Radio Free Insanity with your host, James Gutman. Yo, Gutman, what's the ish?
What's up, everybody? That's right. My name is James Gutman. Today it's Friday. It's June the 9th. It's 2006. You are on WorldWrestlingInsanity.com. And you are listening to JG's Radio Free Insanity. And we have a show unlike any other this week. It is not safe for work. And as I said before many times, if you're listening to audio at work, you don't really care about work anyway. So it's not really a big deal. But if you're one of those people who don't like bad words, don't like bad language, and you know who you are, you're shit out of luck. So, because we're going to be joined in part two by Tracy Smothers, the straight shooting young pistol, wide-eyed southern boy, full-blooded Italian, who really does not mince words and does not hold anything back. Let me give you guys some quick background on Tracy before we go to part two. Tracy last year was a part of ECW One Night Stand 1. I guess we could put the 1 in front of it now. And was in the ring and a part of the brawl that involved JBL and the Blue Meanie. JBL went into the ring, took liberties with the Blue Meanie, decided that he had heard that Meanie was talking about him on his blog. It's a new generation of wrestling. Everyone's got internet access, so people say things about each other online. JBL was upset about it. Meanie said, you know, it's only a work. It's just a work, you know, that whole kind of thing. So instead, JBL went into the ring and pounded the piss out of him during what was supposed to be a worked brawl, which is, anybody who knows me and read the book knows that's a big problem that I have. It's wrestlers fighting during times when they should be working. I think at that point, that is a real break in professionalism. You want to fight outside the ring, you want to fight out back, that's cool, but when you're in the ring and you're being paid to do a job, you shouldn't do that. Just to me, I think it's wrong. You want to work stiff with somebody, you want to teach somebody a little bit of respect like that, say, you know what, I'm gonna fight somebody, maybe my punches will be a little stiffer than usual, maybe my kicks will be a little stiffer than usual. That's one thing. People do that all the time, but and don't go into the ring for a gimmicked battle royal and proceed to really assault somebody, which is what this great commentator on MSNBC and CNBC decided to do at One Night Stand. So Tracy Smothers, at the time, was 42 years old. Really just passed his time in wrestling, hadn't really done anything for a mainstream company in quite some time, but did not care, because Tracy's like that. Tracy's an old-school tough guy. He was a bounty hunter. He did a lot of different jobs outside of wrestling. So he challenged JBL to a shoot fight. JBL didn't accept. Then he challenged Dave Meltzer to a shoot fight. Sometime around all this, he also challenged Daniel Pewter to a shoot fight. Well, Tracy Smothers continued to pop up, especially this year. Kurt Angle came out with his teeth, with the words written on them, just writing things on his mouth, which is fun, I guess, for him. And he made the challenge for ECW One Night Stand 2, or ECW another One Night Stand, or One Night a Year Stand, whatever you want to call it, made an open challenge. It was one of those gimmicked WWE challenges, one of those, you know, I'll fight anybody in this arena as long as it's a person that they scripted to fight me, you know, one of those things. But he made the challenge a few days before Raw, and now obviously the eventual challenger ended up being Randy Orton, but the day before Randy Orton showed up and accepted the challenge, Tracy Smothers accepted the challenge by going on his website, which, to me, I'm telling you guys, I thought that was one of the greatest things I had heard. It was really a stroke of genius in the sense that I had actually spoken to somebody about this and how it made no sense that no one else picked up on that. It wouldn't have taken anything for TNA to set up a quick press conference with Spike TV and have Samoa Joe accept Kurt Angle's challenge. You know, I'll fight Kurt Angle at One Night Stand. What's WWE going to do? not accept it, well then Kurt Angle's a bitch compared to Samoa Joe, and that would have been a great kind of springboard. But no one did it except for Tracy Smothers on his message board, and what he said was, I'll just read it to you guys. He says, "I, Tracy Smothers, am answering the challenge of Kurt Angle to fight him at One Night Stand 2. I didn't think it was cool how he called us all garbage last year and ran down ECW. Now that they have put him in ECW, he's unhappy to be there. It's good timing for Bradshaw to have a bad back when I've challenged him for a year, and that punk Daniel Pewter just happens to have an MMA fight Friday as his excuse for not showing up. All you have to do is check my site to see that I am working Tuesday through Saturday this week and have Sunday off. I left the date open, hoping to get a call to fight at One Night Stand 2, but I heard that I have heat for calling out JBL and for what I said about Steph on a previous post. I will pull Bradshaw's eyeballs out and anyone else who doesn't like what I am saying live on pay-per-view June 11th in front of God and everybody. That's if Vinnie Mac and Big Steph, who ought to get bitch slapped like she did Jim Ross, which wasn't cool, will book me. From what I am told by a reliable source, making those comments about JBL and Steph are the reasons I will not be a part of ECW. So that is the answer to all the questions that I get on every show I work, 6 times a week, sometimes 2 times a night in the States or overseas. You know the deal. I have more heat than the sun, and with those guys, and I wouldn't have it any other way. Later, Tracy." Now, this is right from his website, which is tracysmothers.biz. You guys can check it out. He goes out there, and the thing with Tracy Smothers, so many people are used to, you know, working. And of course, you know, there's a little bit of the publicity involved in it, but Tracy Smothers really is an old-school guy. Doesn't really see things as, let's work, everybody. Really, I mean, he has values when it comes to certain things, and one of those things is ECW, which is what we talk about a little bit in the interview. But among other things, you guys are going to be into it. It's unlike any other interview we've had on here before. But one of the things that we do touch upon with Tracy is that WWE uses kind of that feeling of ECW is garbage. They're all garbage wrestlers, and they use it to get heat. And they think that people are going to say, you know, ooh, boo, how could you say that about ECW? But what the McMahons fail to realize is that a guy like Tracy Smothers, who was a trainer for ECW and helped put some of these wrestlers in the ring and get them prepared, doesn't really look at it as a wrestling form of getting heat or work or anything like that. He takes it personally, and he can't blame him for that. You know, I mean, this is WWE. He doesn't work for them. They come out there and they make comments about ECW being garbage and things like that. And to somebody who really gave a lot of time to the company, worked really hard as a trainer and putting a lot of those guys in the ring, he takes it personally. And I mean, you have to understand where he's coming from. Even if you don't agree with calling people out or some language that is definitely going to be used in part two, you have to understand his position here, and I definitely understand his position. So agree or not agree, it's definitely the kind of thing where you could say, well, at least the guy is coming from somewhere and knows exactly what the problem is. Speaking of ECW, let's talk a little bit about this new ECW thing that happened last night. Last night was actually, last night for me right now, but actually 2 nights ago, we had the ECW head-to-head special with WWE. I might as well give you guys my take on the whole situation. I'll go straight down the line. One of the things about the show is that it reminded me a lot of the Saturday Night's Main Event show that they did with Shane and Shawn Michaels. In that, I thought it was a good standalone show. I thought if you sat at home, you had nothing to do on a Wednesday night, there was really no other shows on. Dateline was catching the online predator pedophiles like they do every week, so I actually taped that because I find that stuff hilarious. But over on USA, they had the head-to-head thing. It was a good show. If you watch it just as a standalone show on a Wednesday night, you enjoyed it, you had a good time with it, and you knew where they were going with it. Unfortunately, I think that just like Saturday Night's Main Event, while the show itself was good, I think long-term planning and the ECW angle took a major hit on the last special. I think that the ECW brand itself is really being watered down to the point of coming off like the Invasion. And here's kind of how the show went. The very first match was Rey Mysterio and Rob Van Dam. And they gave Van Dam the pinfall on Rey. And it was one of those times where I was actually upset about what I had seen. And one of the reasons why I was upset was not because I like Rey Mysterio, okay? Because a lot of us are going to turn around now, and people like Rob Van Dam, you know? And people say, well, at least it's not the great Khali, at least it's not Mark Henry, but you know what, to me, it's all the same. Rey Mysterio is the world champion of SmackDown. Had Rey not jobbed to everybody else that ever existed on the brand, then I could see jobbing him to Rom to give, you know, Van Damme kind of that push forward. Didn't really like it. Thought it was kind of a bad move on their part. I think they've done a lot to really hurt Rey Mysterio, take away from his title reign. I mean, he doesn't seem like a world champion. And a world champion shouldn't be losing constantly, all the time, to everyone. And that's kind of what happened. That being said, I think the fact that he's jumped to everyone else that existed kind of softened that blow a bit. I definitely wouldn't have done that. I think it was a bit of a mistake. But you take it for what you will. Other things that we had on there, Kurt Angle and Randy Orton kind of did their face-to-face, which was actually pretty well put together. One of the things about Randy Orton that I don't get is he's back on Raw. No one really explained that, but whatever. He's on Raw. Cool like that. Another thing with Orton that I thought was strange was I thought WWE was going to hold off on putting him in the ring until the One Night Stand show, but instead they put him out there for the big Battle Royal, the 10-on-10 thing, and that was what it was. We'll get to that in a second, but next we'll talk about Mickie James against Jazz, which was surprising, because Jazz is one of the women who was released by WWE in that mass exodus with, you know, her husband and all these other people just gone following the Diva Search. Now, the thing with Jazz coming back, and which is still confusing about the ECW brand, is for WWE to find uses for these guys who they had no use for so long just because they can now plug their names onto ECW. It was good to see her, though. And I like that, hopefully, and this is why I said that the direction they're taking is kind of scary, if ECW is used the way a lot of people want to see it used, a lot of people will be getting jobs again. A lot of people who are out of work, a lot of people who have talent. I think Jazz has a lot of talent. I think some of the guys that they're bringing, Sandman. I mean, Sandman, when he's on, can really turn a crowd up by being kind of an anti-hero. Whether or not that'll still play out well in 2006 as it did in 1997, that's a different story. We're going to have to wait on that. But I think in the meantime, it's a good way to get people jobs and things like that. What scares me about ECW actually came about in the Battle Royal, and that was the big surprising turn of the Big Show wearing the ECW shirt. Big Show, along with Kurt Angle, were the two ECW guys celebrating at the end of the Battle Royal, which was not good. And I'll tell you why it wasn't good. It was just like the Alliance angle. I mean, to a T, it was all, this whole thing is turning into the WWE, WCW, ECW invasion of 2001. And for those of you guys who don't remember that, it was one of the worst put together angles I could remember. And one of the reasons for that, and you ran into this throughout the entire show, in order to make an angle like that survive, you have to almost turn off all of the feuds that you're having within your company. And you saw that. If you watch the finale of the show, without skipping ahead too far yet, there was a big brawl at the end, which, I mean, you knew was coming. A big brawl. It's WWE versus ECW. Why would it end with a brawl? And one of the problems that you run into is that here are guys in WWE that are feuding with each other, like Randy Orton. Randy Orton came out earlier on, and he said, you know, Kurt, if it wasn't for you, I would have beaten Rey Mysterio. I could beat Rey Mysterio with my eyes closed, and Rey Mysterio sucks. You know? And then at the end of the show, Randy Orton and Rey Mysterio are teaming up to beat up ECW guys. And when I say teaming up, I don't mean just on the same side. I mean the two of them are both pounding on the same people together. And you're watching, and you're like, well, that's ridiculous. And there's Mark Henry, you know, big Mark Henry, and he's with Bobby Lashley, and it's like, you know, why don't you go out of your way to kill everybody's momentum, you know? Mark Henry's the most hated guy there. He's injured everybody on the planet. Bobby Lashley is your biggest up-and-coming babyface, and you have them both together beating up an ECW guy for no reason, wearing T-shirts, you know, wearing the SmackDown T-shirts, wearing the Raw T-shirts. It just really seems so silly, so out of place, and so not right. But you know what? That was just one part of it. The other part with the Big Show and Kurt Angle and why it reminds me of the Alliance is because the show, they weren't ECW guys. You know, Big Show wasn't an ECW. Angle wasn't an ECW. And this is a lot like the Alliance. The Alliance did that. There was a period where WWE was signing these WCW guys and bringing them in. Booker T and Billy Kidman and Palumbo and Sean O'Hare. And rather than making them the focal point of the invasion as these real, genuine invaders, they have Steve Austin jump and become an Alliance member. Why? No reason. Steve Austin hated WCW, and they put him in WCW's stable in 2001. Kurt Angle joined the Alliance in 2001. Once again, really taking away from the big reason behind it. You know, It doesn't become an ECW WWE feud if you're just taking your guys and putting them in ECW t-shirts. And I'll tell you what was funny about it was my wife hadn't watched a lot of this stuff, and she was watching a part of the ECW show last night, and Kurt Angle came out, and she goes, "Why is Kurt Angle wearing an ECW shirt?" I'm like, "Oh, he's an ECW now." She's like, "Oh." And it almost feels like, not only confusing, but it presents the idea to your audience that you don't have faith in the people that are in your ECW, okay? You know, it looks like they know that the ECW guys are bit players, and that's how they're portrayed, and that's wrong, you know? To have these guys who are supposed to represent ECW, Balls Mahoney, Sandman, you know, you dust off Steven Richards for the night and you bring them all out, but then you all have them all act as supporting players for Big Show and Kurt Angle, who represent ECW. Just to me, I think it's a mistake. I think it's a step back. I think by adding too many WWE guys to the mix, and I mean, you have to remember, the show hasn't even debuted on Sci-Fi yet, and we already have two guys defecting. So you don't know what the hell is going to happen down the line. But once you start doing that, you water down the brand. It now becomes just a third brand. It doesn't become ECW. It doesn't have new faces. It doesn't have new names as much as it has guys who have already been elsewhere. You know what I mean? Whether or not Big Show and Kurt Angle are going to be great assets to the company or not, or company or the brand, I don't know. But I definitely think it was a mistake this early to switch these guys and to make them the focal point. By having the two of them be the two to celebrate at the end of the Battle Royal was ridiculous. Yeah, it just hurts it. It just teaches your audience that you're not you don't have enough faith in the people that are already, you know, in ECW. I do want to say that Lawler and Taz I thought were great for the night. One of the problems that I had with Lawler on Monday was that he's involved in the storyline against Taz for the ECW show. So on Monday, when he's trying to call the action for, you know, Raw matches, he has tunnel vision on ECW. And he's talking about Taz, and he's talking about ECW, even when it wasn't appropriate and it wasn't a part of the matches. And the problem with that was, if he hadn't been talking about ECW, we'd probably be complaining about that and saying, well, this guy's got a match to sell. So WWE kind of screwed themselves on Monday, but they did a good job on Wednesday. And one of the things that I have to say I was wrong about at the very beginning was when I first tuned in and I saw two broadcast tables all at the same time, I said, oh my God, you got to be kidding me, you know, four broadcasters, you know, I mean, because to me, usually that's a big mess. They made it work. I mean, they made it work really well on Wednesday. Lawler and Taz, the two of them, really, I mean, they tore into each other. Jim Ross, I thought, did a great job of staying kind of almost middle ground while not being completely unbiased, but still being the real voice of reason out of the four of them. But Taz and Lawler, I mean, they were shooting on each other, you know, telling Lawler, you know, high school girls and blah, 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 and Lawler's talking about, you know, short Tazes and garbage wrestling. And I think the two of them, they came together, they created some real friction, they created, you know, a real battle. And then when they did fight each other, get into that brawl, it came off legit. They were throwing some really stiff punches. I mean, you just watch it, and you could tell. You don't need to be told by anybody. You just watch the episode and see the punches thrown by Taz and by Lawler, but be able to tell that by the end of it, they were, you know, still working together. No one kind of went out of character. So that worked out, too. Whether or not the match is going to be good, that's anybody's guess, but as far as I'm concerned, I thought that they did a good job of selling it, they did a good job of putting it together, and they did a good job of building it up on Wednesday. Two more quick things about the show I want to touch on. Two surprising things. One person was good when most people don't expect that person to be good, and the other person was bad. Well, most people expect that person to not be bad. I'm talking a little about John Cena and Mick Foley. I thought Cena was great. I thought Cena did I mean, I don't say great, because, I mean, I really think that John Cena, when allowed to be in your face, a hard ass, is a great character. I think the early John Cena's promos were amazing. I think John Cena, for a while, had potential to really take over the business, and it became kind of like that sanitized WWE style. But you got a little glimpse of it last night. I think the line about Sabu, where he said, homicidal, genocidal, dance recital, chic of the week, I thought was great. I thought that was one of Cena's best lines in a very long time. And I think John presented real emotion. And I think a lot of his character, and I'm just guessing at this here by watching his promos, I think he's taking a lot of that animosity that he must feel towards how he's treated by a lot of the fans, and he's starting to use that to kind of get some genuine emotion. I think one of Cena's biggest problems for a while has been just skating along and just trying to be entertaining as opposed to trying to be real and trying to use his real emotions and his real feelings to kind of project what he's trying to say. And I think he did that last night. He did that at the ECW show, did it well, presented really a good promo, came together with a fairly good match. I thought the match was pretty good, too, against Sabu. I think Sabu has a lot of potential in WWE, too. They seem to be really high on him, so that was cool. So Cena, yeah, definite props to Cena. Negative aspect, Mick Foley. Mick Foley is really hitting some skids lately. Came into the ring, and whoever booked this should be shot, because, I mean, you don't have to be a genius to figure out that this wasn't going to work. Mick Foley sat in the ring and delivered a promo that would have been better suited for a backstage kind of promo, okay? And then we all took a look back at his anti-hardcore speeches from the old ECW, where he went out there and, the fans want me to kill myself, and, I hate them. And that was pretty much the gist of it, and that's cool and whatever. But Foley's problem was they did a skit where he sat in the ring, darkened, and did the basic Foley whine. ECW was like a girlfriend that didn't treat him right, and blah, 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 and that whole thing. And while it wasn't bad to watch it on TV, the people in the audience didn't like it. There were some boring chants. Problem that we're getting to with Foley is that, Foley's not invincible. No one in this business is invincible. And for so long, Mick Foley was untouchable, in that everything that he did was great. And what WWE fails to realize is the reason why everything he did was great was because everything that they put together for him was great. It has a lot to do with his personality and his jovial nature, but really, he was scripted in better stuff than what he's being scripted in now. And he comes out there and he delivers these speeches, and people are just getting tired of the Mick Foley speeches. And you can't blame them. They all kind of sound the same in the end. A lot of them have to do with Ric Flair sacrificing his body, what he gave to the business, and there's only so many times you could hear the same spiel. There has to be something new, there has to be something better put together, and I think this ECW feud that he's got going on is really just a rehash of so many previous kind of Mick Foley ECW situations that people are tired of it. And I think one of the things with that angle last night, they could have definitely used some sort of hardcore, really just a brutal beatdown by Funk, maybe with a flaming baseball bat or something really had to be done to break up the monotony of that sit-down interview, and they didn't. It just went straight through, and people really didn't seem to be into it. You can't blame them, but so it goes. I think the Foley heel turn has not worked out well. I think Mick might have been better in Kurt Angle's spot, or in a Big Show spot. I think Mick Foley, as one of the faces of ECW, would have made much more sense than Big Show or Kurt Angle. I think Kurt Angle should have stayed anti-ECW. He should have come out and they should have used the fact that he walked out on ECW years ago as his selling point. Turn around and say, I showed up and you guys crucified people in the ring with barbed wire and you're disgusting and you're never going to be different. Well, this is the new vision, Kurt. Screw your new vision. I don't care. I hate you. And that should have been his thing. And he should have been the guy who was leading the WWE guys against ECW. And Foley should have just stayed where he was. And he should have continued to defend ECW, because that's what people are comfortable with him doing. That's the kind of stuff that works for Mick Foley. And really, after all he's done in his career, it's not really time for him to play heel anymore. I think, if anything, he should sit back for a while and see what happens. Is his character stale? Yeah, his character was stale, but if you put him in an ECW shirt, you let him defend the honor of ECW, I think his character probably would have freshened up a bit, but that's that. So there you have it, guys. That was a head-to-head show. Hopefully, if you're listening to this before Sunday, you are geared up for One Night Stand. I don't want to sit here and piss on everybody's Cheerios, because, I think the show is going to be good. It was good last year. Hopefully, it'll be good this year. There is a big difference this year. Last year's show was a standalone show. It was the first one in about 5 years that anyone has done any ECW show, so obviously it was a little bit different. This show is different in that now they have a brand coming out of it, starting next Tuesday on the Sci-Fi Network, so a lot of what you see on Sunday isn't necessarily just going to be kind of an ECW card. It's going to have to build up to things that they have down the line, so we'll see what happens with that. Hopefully it's good. Hopefully you enjoyed it, or you will enjoy it, or you're enjoying it now. Either way, have fun with that, guys. Pretty cool stuff. So that was head-to-head WWECW on Wednesday night. But you know what, guys? You want to know about Insanity, right? It is World Wrestling Insanity. That is the name on the marquee, as Ric Flair used to say. Well, let's talk about Insanity, and let's talk about this week's Moment of Insanity.
All right, JR. Time for your colon surgery, and everyone, man, I'm Dr. Heine. I want you to meet Nurse Swapper Knockers.
Fear is only a four-letter word.
The world's largest love machine, Viscera.
As voted by you, the readers of WorldWrestlingInsanity.com, it's this week's Moment of Insanity.
Hey, what happened?
I keep on falling.
Please help me, I'm falling.
This week's Moment of Insanity, in case you missed it, was Charlie Haas running to the ring on Monday Night Raw, bouncing into the ropes that Leon Garcia was trying to leave out of, and knocking her into the floor, and then proceeding to wrestle his match while you heard Leon screaming from ringside, which when you found out that her injury was a sprained wrist, it really kind of seemed like a lot of screaming. There really isn't a lot of backstory to give here. Lillian Garcia is a ring announcer. She goes in the ring. She does the announcements. Hopefully, she gets them right sometimes, so that's cool. And then she was leaving the ring, leaving out of the side that, you know, Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler sit on, and she's walking out of the ring, and Charlie Haas comes running to the ring like a house of fire and bounces off the ropes. Now, I'm not talking about another set of ropes, because that was always a big wrestling thing. For those of you guys who remember wrestling in the 80s, and they don't do this spot anymore, where they would tie a guy up in the ropes on one side of the ring, and they would tie his arms up, and then go to the other side and shake the ropes, and it would hurt them somehow. You know, it would, I guess, tense up the ropes and hurt their arms. This wasn't the kind of thing where Charlie bounced off of the opposite ring ropes. Charlie actually bounced against the rope right next to where she was, like basically rammed into her in the ring. You see her take a tumble, and then you hear this screaming, And one of the things about Lillian, she's not, I'm not going to say anything bad about her, but she does have a reputation for being a bit of a diva, if you will. So you heard it, and you have to figure that there's a match going on, there's so much noise in the arena, and all you hear is Lillian screaming and screaming and screaming. Funny stuff. I mean, I didn't really get it at first that it happened so much on camera and was so visible to everybody, and it actually killed the beginning of this match, which wasn't really a great match anyway. I mean, it was a basic Haas Nitro match, both of them kind of being used as filler, nothing really big. Nitro really, I don't know, kind of brought to Raw and then forgotten about quickly, not really doing all that much, but I mean, the real gist here was just the visual that came from it. And I mean, there's lots of reasons for it. Maybe Lillian didn't like World Wrestling Insanity, the book, to which Charlie Haas contributed quotes. That's not true, but it's just a good way to mention the book and kind of funny. I don't know. It was definitely one of those times in professional wrestling where somebody screwed up and you know, something funny kind of got caught on tape. I mean, this has been done before, guys. I've gotten injured in the ring, and you've seen things, a big dreaded X. And for those of you guys who have asked about what that is and don't really know things like that, watch a wrestling match. And when somebody gets hurt in a match, like somebody will really get hit, let's say, you know, and look like they get, you know, the hell knocked out of them, fall to the mat, and the referee always comes over and talks to them. The referee is actually checking to see if that person's okay. Now, if that person is okay, the referee is going to raise one arm or both arms up in the air. And you saw it last night. I think it had happened during the Ray-Rob Van Dam match. Rob hit some really stiff shots. And, you know, Ray's rolling around, and the referee came over to him and, you know, talked to him and, you know, raised one arm in the air. He was okay. Now, unlike that match on Wednesday, if a guy is hurt in the ring or somebody gets hurt, you'll see the referee do the big dreaded X, which is raising both arms in the air and crossing them together almost like a D-Generation X thing. So keep your eye out on that. It's one of the things that a lot of a lot of people do. I find myself doing it. If I watch a wrestling match and someone takes a really hard shot, I usually watch the referee immediately following, because you want to see if the X is going to go up. WWE is aware of that and does go out of their way not to show the referee sometimes following that, but you will catch the one arm in the air, the two arms in the air. But usually, if you're watching a wrestling match and you're worried if somebody is hurt, watch for the referee and see what the referee does. Another thing to remember, too, is just because the referee doesn't give the X doesn't mean the guy isn't hurt. A lot of times the guy will hurt himself, want to continue with the match, tell the referee, you know, I'm all right. They'll put the one arm up, and then you find out later it was a minor injury. But if somebody really gets hurt to the point that they have to quit the match or back off for a while, then you'll see the big X in the air. So, yeah, just a little tidbit. I'm just giving you that because really there isn't much more to this moment of insanity other than Lillian Garcia fell on her arse right there at ringside, and a lot of people enjoyed it. Za, our very own Za, who actually, and again, if you're listening to this before One Night Stand 2, Part 2, The Revenge, Za is actually doing real-time coverage of the pay-per-view on Sunday, so be sure to check that out. Za said, I'm going to vote for Lillian's tumble to the floor. I love that Haas kept on as if nothing happened. Professional? Yes, but I didn't even catch him giving a glance her way. I also love that while Lillian was crying on the outside of the ring, the match began. That may be cruel to say, but I was laughing my ass off. Yeah, I did catch Charlie, and I think if you watch the match, you'll see. I mean, Charlie continued with the match, but he did kind of seem distracted, and he was looking at ringside like, oh my God. You got to figure, this is a guy who wasn't with the company for a while. He was let go last year, brought back on Raw, not really used all that often, and just, you know, knocked out the ring announcer, the female ring announcer, who's about 5 feet tall. So, yeah, that's definitely something to be concerned about. And they brought in Justin Roberts, the announcer from, I guess, SmackDown, to cover for her because someone shot Finkel and didn't tell me about it. I'm only kidding. Justin Roberts is actually the one of the other ring announcers they used, Tony Chimmel, Justin Roberts, Lillian Garcia. So they brought him out to kind of cover for her. But yeah, I mean, it really was a bizarre moment that WWE did an okay job of covering up. I think if I was them, I would have done full disclosure on it right off the bat. They try to ignore it. They try not to talk about it until Lillian had been taken from ringside to get medical attention for her wrist or arm. I think I would have said something about it as soon as it happened, just because a lot of fans who didn't catch it, like myself, I didn't catch it when it first happened. You thought the match was dead. You thought that people were just, like, bored. And while they probably were slightly bored, there was also concern over Lillian at ringside. So they really didn't mention it. And then by the time they got around to mentioning it, it was like, oh, maybe that's the problem. All right, cool. Let's see what else you guys had to say. We had Nick, WWF, who says, my initial vote is Lillian's fall. Here you have Haas, who hasn't been back with WWF for so long, and for some reason he just runs the ropes. Now, running into the ropes is one thing, but not being able to see her and stop, now, that's insane. And yeah, I mean, I agree. There's so many different people all voted for it, and it kind of was neck and neck with this Nacho Libre thing. If you guys have checked that out, apparently the guy from Nacho Libre is going to SmackDown, Jack Black. So, yeah, that didn't win, but I think that's going to be a moment of insanity in a few weeks anyway. Nose Nuggets, he'll check in with the final one. He says his moment of insanity is for Lillian's injury care of Charlie. He says he didn't mean to do it, and I'm sure his wife, Jackie, had no involvement in it, even though she's away from TNA, that other federation. Mr. McMahon doesn't want you to know that he doesn't know exists. However, there are certain risks in these jobs, and I'm sure Mr. Haas didn't see Senora Garcia on the ring apron as he was charging into the 24 by 24 squared cable. Very in-depth Nose Nuggets. I would hope he didn't see her. That would be kind of weird. If you're going to attack any female on the roster, I don't know if Lillian would be the number one choice. I'm sure there is a member of the writing team that might be would be ripe for attacking first. But who knows? Went after and banged into the ropes and knocked Lillian out. I don't know. So somewhere she's off singing her national anthem in Spanish in the hospital. So there you go. Lillian Garcia, she's okay now. She's not in the hospital, but whew, screaming like a banshee. Yeah. That was more than insanity, guys. And remember, voting starts now for next week's Moment of Insanity. So go to the message board. Go to the top zone, Gutman's World Wrestling Insanity, and vote away. There should be a thread ready for it, MOI, for next week. If not, you can always send an email to insanity@worldwrestlinginsanity.com. Let me know what you're voting for. Give me a rant, and hopefully you'll be right here on the air if your vote wins the running. without further ado, guys, we are done with part one, and we're going to head over to part two, and we're going to welcome Tracy Smothers to the show. And remember, if you don't like cursing, you're not going to like part two. But so it goes, guys. He's a good old boy, and he's here to say a few things. So go to part two, and we'll all listen to Tracy Smothers. See you there. Be well, and don't get lost.
Brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com.